We've been exploring our text for 2024 and over the last couple of weeks, and this week we're just going to reach the third statement that we've got for 2024. If you haven't got a card, please do grab some. Grab one. There's some still available. And a couple of weeks ago, we looked at what it was meant to have full assurance of faith, to hold on to that in a way that gives us confidence for how we live our lives. We then looked at holding unswervingly to the hope we have, and that was last week. And then this week I want us to think about how we spur one another on towards love and good deeds. And this has all come out of the passage in Hebrews chapter 10, which we'll put up on the screen as a reminder for us all today. So it starts at verse 19 in Hebrews 10. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. As we keep that text before us during this year, we'll continue to allow God to drive us forward, to have that full assurance of faith, and also to hold on to that unswerving hope that we've talked about. But above that, I think, and coming out of that, almost as the fruit that comes out of those things, is this next statement, to spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Having full assurance of hope, full assurance of faith, holding unswervingly to the hope we have, there has to be some output to that, doesn't there? That when we have faith and we add that to that hope, then that can't just remain as something we keep to ourselves. That can't just be for us to feel satisfied that we've done those, we've ticked those things off. Because out of those has to come a responsibility to one another in this, to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. And if you read the New Testament, you'll see very clearly that there is running through it this thread of commitment to being together in the journey of faith. To have full assurance of faith, yes, to hold unswervingly to hope, but we cannot do that alone. We need to be connected to other people. And that's why church, for all its flaws, is the best we've got for it to happen. And that's how I believe God wants to push us on into 2024. If you've read the book of Hebrews, you'll have seen that these themes do recur time and time again through the writer's words. There's a lot of stuff in Hebrews that is difficult to understand. There's imagery there that is particularly Jewish in its character that sometimes we find difficult to dig into. But as you read this book, he is speaking to a group of people and continues to reiterate faith, hope, and love throughout it. In Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 1, he's already said to us that we are family. We are family. I've got all my sisters and brothers with me, yes, yeah, we are family. Get up, everybody, and sing, yeah? We've got some work to do, haven't we, on some of this, I tell you. And that's what we do, isn't it? We're family, we gather together on a Sunday morning, we get up, everybody, and we sing, and that connects us as family, and that's what the writer of Hebrews says. Therefore, Hebrews chapter 3, verse 1, therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. That's the faith that we share with one another. Whenever we come together, we deepen and grow that faith. It gives us a full assurance of faith a little bit more every week because we realize when we gather together, we're not on our own. And when you look around at the people God's called, it makes you smile, doesn't it? I mean, surely it makes me smile every week. You can look around. It's fine. Yes, it's fine. Yeah. We're going to have a day when we have a little rota when we all come up and look down at everybody else. It will do you the world of good because we're family. We could almost start again, couldn't we? But we won't. We won't. And that's how we develop this full assurance of faith, when we're together in this. Because on our own, it's easy for that faith to diminish or weaken. When we're out on our own during the week, wherever we are, that faith can get smaller. And knowing that we're in this together will continue to help us. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6 says, Christ is faithful as the Son over God's house. See, we're not only family, we're God's household as well. And we are his house, if indeed we hold firmly to our confidence and the hope in which we glory. We're being built together, Paul uses as another image in one of his letters. We're being built together as God's temple, as his house. And it's in that house that we hold on to hope when we know that we're part of something that God is building. We're family, we're household. We also share the same purpose. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. Encourage one another daily as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Encourage one another. In our text, spur one another on. Because it's easy, if we don't do that, for us to fall by the wayside and sin's deceitfulness grabs hold of us. So we keep cheering each other on in this journey. We have the same purpose. And without knowing that we're connected, without feeling that connection, we can so easily become isolated and vulnerable. Where together we stand and grow and make a difference when we are on our own during the week. I was interested to read about the sequoia redwood trees. Do you know the redwood trees that grow in California? Huge, colossal trees. And they have the great tree, the General Sherman. Some of you may have been there and seen it. And it's noted to be the largest known living single-stem tree on Earth, 275 feet high, 25 feet in diameter, and approximately 2,500 years old. That's quite impressive, isn't it? That's an impressive tree. And it's still standing. Despite all the changing conditions over 2,500 years, it is still standing. And do you know, its roots only go down about 10 feet. That's all. The roots of the redwood tree only goes down, on average, about 10 feet below the ground. And yet it shoots up 275 feet. That is remarkable, don't you think? How does it stay standing? How do these trees stay standing? You'll see them very close to each other. And they stay standing because their root system, although it doesn't go deep, it goes very wide. And their roots are all intertwined with each other. That's how they keep standing. Because they are joined together, intertwined, and they're able to support each other no matter what is happening above ground. It's a remarkable feat of God's creation, isn't it? And a great example, perhaps, for us as well. That even when our roots feel a little bit shallow, if we can get intertwined with others, we keep strong together. We are able to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. And perhaps that's all I need to remind you of today, that we are called together for a purpose, to be his family, to be his household. And when we come together, we have the opportunity to intertwine our roots together, because following Jesus is not something we can do alone. So that when you're on your front line, maybe later today, in the workplace, looking after grandkids, visiting relatives who are unwell, in the clubs, in the groups that you're part of during the week, whatever it is you do, you know that you are joined and linked and supported and encouraged by many, many others who are there spurring you on towards love and good deeds. Full assurance of faith, unswerving hope, becomes possible when we know that we're not on our own, when we know that there are others there. Knowing that when you wake up, someone else is considering you. That's a bit scary, perhaps. But isn't that an amazing thing, that God may have put your name into the mind of somebody else who at that moment is praying for you as you get up ready for the tasks ahead that you have to face. Someone is remembering you, praying for you, cheering you on, whatever it is that you are facing that day when you get up, because we're connected to one another through this miracle of the call that God has given us, our faith and our hope. So I guess what the question is, how do we do that? How do we get to a stage where we do naturally consider how we can spur one another on towards love and good deeds? Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German Lutheran pastor and theologian who was an anti-Nazi dissident during the Second World War, who was in fact hanged for his opposition to Hitler on the 9th of April 1945, just before the end of the war. He wrote perhaps two of the most significant books that have come into the Christian library. One, The Cost of Discipleship, which if you haven't read it, I recommend you read it. The second book is called Life Together. When he reflects on what it looks like to be community, to be a community of faith, and this was born out of his own experience of community. And I really would like this to move on, but it never seems to want to move on for me. Can I do it now? Do you want to just move it on for me, Doug? I think I've come to a halt. Could we get to could you get on to the next one and the next one? That would be great. There we are. And here's what he has to say. This is just part of the quote I want to read. He says this: just as surely as God desires to lead us to a knowledge of genuine Christian fellowship, so surely must we be overwhelmed by a great disillusionment with others, with Christians in general, and if we are fortunate, with ourselves. The sooner this shock of disillusionment comes to an individual and to a community, the better for both. A community which cannot bear and cannot survive such a crisis, which insists upon keeping its illusion when it should be shattered permanently, loses in that moment the promise of Christian community. So in other words, the illusion of Christian community, we think it's going to be perfect, we need to shatter that, he's saying, because it's not going to be perfect. And do you know why it's not going to be perfect? Just look at the person next to you and say, it's because of you. It's because of you. It's not going to be perfect. And he's saying, you know, we have this illusion of thinking that everything is going to be perfect when we become part of a Christian community. And it won't be. But if we understand that from the beginning, he's saying, then we've got a hope of building something significant. We feel let down by others, don't we? When the dream of the community doesn't match the reality of our own experience. But it can't and it never will. And to coin a phrase, you just got to get over it. Read Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. It's an amazing. The perfect church is in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. They met together every day. They loved each other every day. They sold things that they had to give away to other people. And it's the perfect community. But just read a little bit later on in the story, will you? Read the rest of the New Testament. It wasn't perfect. And we need to understand that we don't come to this place of perfection. We come to this place of brokenness. And that's where we start to build the sort of community with honesty and integrity. And this is the beautiful thing about church. We get to try. We get to have a go to see if we can be the family, the household, with the purpose that God has called us to. We get to spur one another on to greater things, to love and good deeds, to say, do you know what? I know things have gone wrong. I know things may have broken, but let's get up and let's get going again. And spur one another on once more towards love and good deeds. So how can we incite one another? The word spur, translated in that Hebrews, it means to incite one another, to provoke one another, to stir up one another. How can we start to do that? Well, I don't know if I've got this or not, but there we are. Firstly, forgive each other for not being God, all right? Forgive one another for not being God. Turn to the person next to you, say, you are not God, and I forgive you. Let's try that today, shall we? Please do it gently. Do it gently. In love, okay? You are not God, and I forgive you. Because if we've got this grand view of who other people are, then it's going to be shattered, isn't it? As I've already said. Now, that isn't an excuse for poor attitudes or poor behavior towards other people. It's no excuse for holding grudges or unforgiveness or getting angry or bitter or judgmental with other people. None of those things are ever justified in a Christian community. But it is a reason why Christian community isn't perfect. Because none of us are God, and we need to forgive each other for that. Now, another great theologian, I'm sorry, I've had a bit of a theologian fest this week, but please excuse me for that. Henry Nouwen, who was a Dutch Catholic priest, professor, writer, and theologian, he wrote this. I'll read you the full one. He says this: forgiveness means that I continually am willing to forgive the other person for not being God. That's where the phrase comes from. It comes from Henry Nouwen. For not fulfilling all my needs. I too must ask forgiveness for not being able to fulfill other people's needs. The interesting thing is that when you can forgive people for not being God, then you can celebrate that they are a reflection of God. And that's what changes community. When we begin to understand who we are. And that's not to make us feel depressed or unworthy or hopeless. That's to help us to breathe again, to feel the relief that in our brokenness we can still be part of this community that God is building. So I think that's the first thing, a great place to start. Here's the next thing. No, that's not right either. That should say listen in love. Why does it say move closer? I don't know. I'm really sorry. That's my third point. We'll come to that in a minute. My second point is listen in love. I believe that the greatest gift we can give to one another is time to listen. Is that a good starting point? Yeah. To give people time to listen to them. John Powell, I'm sorry, I'm quoting lots of people, but it's fascinating. He wrote a book, Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? He says that there are various levels of conversation that we get into, and these are the levels here. So the first one is cliche. We start a conversation by saying to somebody, how are you? And what do they say? I'm fine. So that's cliche, okay? But that's okay. That's a nice place to start, particularly if it's a stranger. Do you know, if it's somebody you've never met before? That's an okay place to start. It's a great question to start with. Don't leave it there, but it's a good place to start. The next level, he says, are facts. So a question like, what's been happening in your day? You know, a fact. So the person you speak to can tell you a fact, something they've done. They reveal a little bit of what you know, but they do little to reveal anything about who you are. The next level of conversation, he says, is opinions. What do you think about? What do you think about the election? What do you think about the American election? What do you think about Bournemouth losing to Liverpool last week? I was hoping so much that Bournemouth would... Do you remember we talked about hope last week? Yeah, I was hoping desperately. I even wore my lucky socks last Sunday morning. I was meant to show them to you, but it didn't work. They lost. But you have an opinion, can't you? How do you think they played? How do you think that went? What do you think about this issue? Then he says you move then to an emotional level. How are you feeling today? So we're moving away from the sort of facts to feelings now. You're conveying your hopes and fears, your disappointments and defeats. You're opening yourself up a little bit more. But he says there's another level, transparency, where you dig a bit deeper into who you really are. It invites accountability. It invites correction if needed. And it can be reciprocated as well. Now, that's not the place you generally start a conversation in when you first meet somebody. But it is a place to head for. And I know some of you already are saying, no, never, ever am I going to get to that level of conversation of telling you who I am. But that's why we start where we start. But I'm suggesting that if we want that deeper connection, if we want to get better at spurring one another on towards love and good deeds, maybe we get our roots intertwined with this level of conversation. Can I urge you then to listen in love to one another? The third thing is to move closer. To move closer. Now, the Greek word in the text to translate as spur is paroxysmos, a provocation. It literally means to jab somebody, okay? To jab them so they must respond, okay? Because when you've been jabbed, you jump, don't you, generally? Yeah? When you've had your COVID jab or your shingles jab or your, what other jabs have we had? Flu jabs, your MMR jabs. Generally you flinch, don't you? A little bit, as brave as you are. You know, we generally flinch when that happens. But to be jabbed, you have to be close, don't you? You have to be within an arm's reach of somebody actually physically jabbing you. And it's that proximity, I think, that counts when it comes to spurring, cheering, provoking, jabbing one another towards love and good deeds. We move closer to one another. That's what transparency does. If we're taking time to listen, we're moving closer to that person, spending a bit longer listening to them. And then we get the opportunity just to jab them. You know, when COVID took hold and we were all facing restrictions about meeting together, we all suffered from the lack of physical contact with other people. We all changed in that moment. And for some of us, it's been really hard to get back to how it was before COVID. To meet with people, to take time with people, to take that next step. It's been really difficult to do that. And we've had to relearn, whatever age we are, what it means to move closer to others again. But it is this, I think, that lies at the heart of Christian community in our relationships to people, is that we will take the risk of moving closer. You know, the essential relationship that we build that on is seen in the idea of God as Trinity. And there is this lovely Greek dance called the perichoresis. I was going to demonstrate it to you today, but I ran out of time to practice it. But this is a Greek wedding dance, okay? And the word means to go or come around. It's a Greek wedding dance. And in the Greek wedding dance, it's not two dancers together, it's three dancers together. And they start going round and round in circles, intertwining themselves with each other. And they go faster and faster and faster as the music builds up and builds up. And yet they stay in perfect rhythm with each other. So you see them as individuals, but you see them as one in this blur as it gets faster and faster and quicker and quicker. And theologians in the early church, not least John of Damascus in the first century BC, he observed the dance and he coined this phrase to describe the reality of the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. He called it a perichoresis, the dance of the Trinity, because there's three persons in this Godhead and they move as one. And modern writers like Jürgen Moltmann and Miroslav Volf and Richard Rohr, they've all used this idea to express this essential relationship that comes out of the heart of the Trinity. It's like a dance where everything moves in harmony, in rhythm with one another. And Christian community needs to reflect the community of the Trinity. That's what it can look like. When we move closer to one another, we begin to dance together. We jab, provoke, stir up, spur on. We can do that best when we move closer and we become part of this heavenly dance that God has expressed to us and longs for us to express to one another as well. The reality is you can't do that with everyone, you know. You know, a ceilidh with 100 people is one thing, but a dance with two others is something completely different. And this is often how it happens in our life as well, that we have various levels of commitment and connection with people. Most of us will have a public connection where we know a lot of people, like being in a church, you know, when you know more than 70 people. And here we are, more than 70 people here. It's a sort of public thing that we're part of. But then we move to a slightly different group of people, a social group of people, where we begin to know the names of people and something about them. So that's a smaller group of people that we get a little bit closer to. And then there's a personal group of people, maybe a group of 5 to 12 people. I guess in church world we call that a small group, don't we? Where we feel a little bit more open and honest, where we get to know people a little bit more. But then there is a group that is more intimate than that. Perhaps 2 to 4 people, the people we are closest to, that we share at a deeper level. And that's perhaps the level that we can best spur one another on. That's how best we can be secure and confident that we are continuing to show this life of Jesus into our world. Perhaps a triplet for prayer. Maybe you meet with two other people and you begin to pray together. And you begin to develop that closer, more intimate community together. Maybe you meet together when you reflect on a Bible passage for 10 minutes or 15 minutes together. You read the same passage, you come together and you reflect on it. Perhaps three of you doing that to hold each other accountable, to encourage, spur on towards love. You know, it becomes more personal then. You can meet in person or you can phone each other or text each other or whatever you want to do to meet together to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. You gather around a table for a meal maybe. And maybe this is a challenge for some of us this year to gather around a table for a meal with the same people during this year. To gather regularly around a table, to begin to develop those relationships. Maybe across cultures as well would be a great challenge for us in our church. And to see what happens. It all takes time, but it can happen. I'm told that all of us can learn to dance somehow, somewhere. And as we move closer, we get better at considering how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. To join the dance, to jab, to provoke, to incite, to stir up. Your dancing days are not over. Can I tell you that? Your dancing days, mine haven't even begun, but yours are not over. And together, maybe we reflect the very heart of God in our relationship with one another as well. In Hebrews 10:25, it says that some have given up meeting together. Maybe that was out of persecution. Maybe it was disillusionment because Jesus hadn't come back again and they were expecting it. Maybe it was business pressures, or maybe it was just apathy. But the writer urges them, encourage one another, and all the more in these times. In these times, I wonder if we will be the people who will keep one another connected, strengthened, loved, and loving, and consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let's live as people of the way of Jesus. He would have danced, wouldn't he? Do you think Jesus would have danced? I mean, he went to plenty of weddings and parties. He must have done. And his call is for us to do the same, to serve one another with compassion and grace, and all the more as we see the day of Jesus appearing. So let's accept the challenge. After all, what the world needs now. Well done, you're getting there. We're getting there together. We're getting there together. And all who have received it, all who have the full assurance of hope, who hold on full assurance of faith, I will get this right by the end of the year, full assurance of faith, who hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess, who then consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. That's what transforms a life, and that is what changes a world.